Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, you're listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. with co-hosts, founder of Homeopathy World Community, Debbie Bruck, and vaccine rights attorney, Alan Phillips. This is June 27th, just after 1 p.m. Eastern Time, Thursday afternoon. This is vaccine rights attorney, Alan Phillips. My wonderful co-host, Debbie Bruck, will be joining me at the half-hour mark. And we are coming to you live on Freedomizer Radio, and being simulcast on Homeopathy World Community Radio. So we are delighted to be continuing to do this show, broadcast live to two different audiences at the same time, and we welcome Freedomizer listeners and Homeopathy World Community listeners both. Pleasure to have you with us today. You can reach us live if you'd like to call into the show with a question or comment. Area code 347-324-3704. That's area code 347-324-3704. You can also find that number at the top of the Freedomizer website. That's freedomizerradio.com. Freedomizerradio.com. They post it right at the top there, so it's easy to find. And let's see. We have tons of things to talk about today. Just like we do every week here, there's just so much going on all the time on the vaccine issue. I wanted to start the show. I just got word this morning that a bill that has been pending in Oregon was signed into law yesterday by the governor of Oregon. Yet another state on the West Coast following Washington State in 2011 and California in 2012 passing exemption laws, vaccine exemption laws that restrict access to exemptions, make it harder to get exemptions. Now, we're talking specifically about parents who want to exercise an exemption for their children with regard to school enrollment. The question of vaccine requirements and exemptions and waivers or exceptions comes up in many, many different areas in the U.S., depending on how you count, over a dozen different categories and subcategories. Right now we're talking about probably the most commonly known or recognized context or subject area here, the schools. But we now have three states on the West Coast that have passed unconstitutional laws unconstitutionally restricting parents' access to exemptions with regard to their children's school enrollment. Now, it turns out that exemption rates have supposedly been higher out west, and particularly the Northwest. And so, for political reasons, the legislatures out there have felt compelled to do something to try and roll back these growing exemption rates, rather than asking, well, what is the reason that more parents are exercising exemptions? And maybe there's some discussion there that needs to be had. You know, one of the things that the vast majority of people in the, what I refer to as the alternative vaccine community, they are concerned with the lack of ability for there to be an open, frank, clear, honest, objective discussion about the issue. Very few of us are demanding outright that all vaccine requirements go away, that nobody ever be allowed to get a vaccine or required to get a vaccine. That's not to say that there aren't some people who don't feel that way, or people who feel like that if there is a truthful, open, honest discussion, full transparency, full access to complete information, full equal ability for all viewpoints and perspectives to be considered, and true objective assessment of all of that information, I personally think if that were to actually happen, that we would see vaccine mandates rapidly disappear and that the many other things we have available to address infectious disease concerns would be aggressively pursued and rapidly become part of policy, procedure, and law. But we don't have any of those things going on. We live in a world full of corruption and deception, and in the U.S. and I think probably increasingly around the world, governments that are driven, heavily influenced, perhaps outright run in some instances by industry. So we have our work cut out for us. But I wanted to spend some time on this bill in Oregon because it really concerns me, because this is now an enormous trend being set by state legislators, legislatures, which is probably going to, or it's certainly at risk of sweeping the country. So I want to elaborate a little bit, because there are an awful lot of people who scream constitution or unconstitutional about a lot of different issues, and nobody's personal opinion that a bill or law or policy is unconstitutional makes that law unconstitutional. As a technical matter, a law is not unconstitutional unless and until a court says so. In fact, quite the opposite, laws are presumed to be constitutional. It is presumed as a starting place that the legislature will only pass laws that are constitutional. And so I'm an attorney. I'm not a court. I don't have authority to rule that the Oregon law or any other law is unconstitutional. So when I say it's unconstitutional, let me clarify that technically what I really mean there is that in my professional opinion, if this law were challenged in court, it would be ruled or held by the court to be unconstitutional, because I believe my understanding of the way the law works and the legal argument I would put forth if hypothetically I were in the position of making that case to the court is the winning argument. So I want to spell that out in a few pieces here. And if I do so in a manner typical to my usual talking modes, I'll spend quite a bit of time on this. But it really boils down to a couple of very short, simple concepts and ideas. So here we go. See where this takes me. So the question of constitutionality, first of all, with regard to these bills, in my opinion, has to do with the component of these laws. I say bills. In this case, I'm talking sort of collectively about all three of the exemption laws now in Oregon, which law takes effect immediately, Washington State, which passed the law in 2011, and I don't remember if that one took effect immediately or not until 2012, but in any event, it's in effect now and been in effect for over a year, I believe. And then the California law, at least parts of which don't take effect until January of next year, if I understand correctly. These specific laws are different in each state, but they all have something in common in that they provide hurdles that a parent who wants to exempt their children from vaccination have to jump over, figuratively speaking. So let me take a couple minutes and read from an article from just a few days ago that was written after the Oregon bill passed the General Assembly, the Senate, and the House, but it was before the bill was signed into law yesterday by the governor of Oregon. And just to tell you what this article says about conditions in Oregon and about this law at the time of this article, still a bill. It's a bill until it gets signed by the governor, and then it becomes law. And there are provisions in most, if not all, state legislatures where even if a governor refuses to sign a bill into law, if there's some requisite majority of members of the General Assembly who vote for it, sometimes bills can become law even if the governor doesn't sign it. But where that's the case, you've got to have a substantial majority and not just a lower majority that gets it to the governor's office or to the other chamber if it's just the Senate or just the House and the other one has yet to vote on it. So this was Senate Bill 132, which the House passed 45-15 a few days ago, and that took it to the governor's office. It was in response to Oregon having, according to this article, the nation's highest rate of kindergartners opting out of immunizations for non-medical reasons in 2012. Of course, it's not the kindergartners, it's their parents. The rate was 5.8% last year. The Oregon Health Authority reported it at 6.4% this year. Rates were 4% in Marion County, 4.5% in Polk County, but as high as 15.2% in at least one county. And some individual schools reportedly had rates as high as 70%. Again, you got to ask yourself, if exemption rates are rising, the knee-jerk reaction from the pharmaceutical industry advocates is, oh, well, we've got to prevent those exemptions from happening, do whatever we can to get more immunization. And nothing in this article says, and as a result of this, we have clear scientific proof that more children are getting sick or more children are dying from infectious disease or anything like that. And this is part of what concerns me about the mentality of the way health departments and the mainstream media address the issue of exemption rates. They just automatically assume, as a matter of fact, that rising exemption rates means a greater risk. But we have states around the country with different immunization rates, and I've never heard anybody make the argument that we can show statistically and scientifically that where there are higher immunization exemption rates, that there are more disease fatalities or anything like that. In fact, to the contrary, I saw an article recently from a CDC official speaking out saying that recent and local pertussis outbreaks were not a result of vaccine exemptions. A CDC official, of all people, specifically saying that it was not the exempt children who were the cause of these recent pertussis outbreaks. So there is, at best, for the pharmaceutical industry's viewpoint on vaccines, conflicting information as to whether or not, or in what situations or to what degree, exemptions even pose a risk, or what the risk is posed, or what actual negative results happen or don't happen. But anyway, I digress in my typical style here. So they're claiming very high exemption rates because there was a journal of the American Medical Association had published an article probably a few years ago now, maybe 2004, somewhere give or take around then, that exemption rates around the U.S. average somewhere in the range of up to 1 to 1.5%. And I've seen, I've seen information more recently saying that overall exemption rates tend to still be in that same general ballpark. But there are individual states, particularly in the West, that have been claiming rapidly rising immunization rates, and other states in the East as well. And I've seen people challenge very convincingly some of those statistics. You know, when you say that X percentage of children are not vaccinated, well, what do you mean by not vaccinated? For example, somebody was criticizing those figures from the Vermont, I think it was Vermont, one of the New England states, health department, and anybody who had not completed the entire full series, they were throwing into this exempt category or not vaccinated category. And there could be people who, children who had done all the vaccines, but one or two, or, you know, had substantially completed the series that were thrown into the not vaccinated category. A very misleading figure, as opposed to children who have either never been vaccinated or after some point in a routine immunization process, as that occurs over a period of years, some points the parents say, we're not vaccinated anymore and claiming an exemption. So statistics are almost always reported as something rock solid, uncontestable, and yet the nature of statistics is that they are inherently not rock solid fact. It depends on what you're counting. It depends on how you're counting it. It depends on who is defining the terms and how they're defining the terms. And you can take the same set of data, and depending on how you define terms and what you count and how you count it, come up with completely different results or implications and so forth. So when people throw out statistics, you have to ask, who's throwing out that statistic? Do they have a stake in how that statistic is presented, how it's interpreted? And if so, or even if not so, what literally and precisely does that number represent? What is it that's being counted? How is it being defined? Who's counting it? So forth. So there's statistics are complicated even in the best and simplest of situations. But let's take this at face value. We'll say they've had rising exemption rates in Oregon, and so the reason for this new law is because of that. Now, there's the framing, of course, here is quite skewed. This bill helps parents make an informed decision about whether they should have their child immunized or not, when what really the bill does is require a biased point of view be imposed on the parents as a way of trying to coerce or perhaps even intimidate them out of exercising an exemption, because this bill or law now requires a parent, first of all, to sign a form when they're requesting a non-medical exemption, which can be on religious or philosophical grounds. I'm glad the article was clear about that, because a lot of people have been saying, oh, the new Oregon law is going to remove the religious exemption. No, what the new Oregon law does is remove the word religious, but it uses a phrase about personal beliefs, which by its plain language meaning, and that's the generally applicable standard in states around the country, if a law is not ambiguous, you give it its plain language meaning, and that is what the legislative intent was, what the legislature intended by using this clear, unambiguous language. Because laws, sort of the first rule in terms of legal analysis is that you interpret a law to give the intent of the legislature. And if the law is unambiguous, if it's clear, if it's if it isn't confusing or potentially be able to be interpreted in two or more different ways, then it means exactly what it says, nothing more, nothing less. It's sort of a silly end point. But attorneys split hairs on words and the meaning of words and phrases all the time. It's what we do for a living. So it is important for states to have rules in place that say, here is how you interpret our laws. Here is what you do if there's a conflict in our laws. Here's how you handle a law if it turns out that it is ambiguous, and so forth. So there are all these rules. But the starting place is you give it the legislative intent, and if it's unambiguous, it means exactly what it says, nothing more, nothing less. Imagine that, a law that means what it says. So this law, as far as I understand at this point, there's no question about its ambiguity, so it means exactly what it says. When it talks about personal beliefs, that's any personal belief. Certainly would not have to be a religious belief, but certainly it could be a religious belief. So anyway, the law does provide exemptions for people who have objections on personal religious or personal philosophical grounds. Either one of those will qualify. As to those people, though, who have religious objections, when a state offers a right that includes honoring and respecting religious beliefs, then that law comes with federal constitutional rights. Our First Amendment has what's called the Free Exercise Clause. It has other things, but part of what's in the First Amendment is the Free Exercise Clause, referring to the free exercise of religion. And this is really important, because the point is that state residents have constitutional rights with some state laws. The state legislatures cannot lawfully pass a law that infringes on their state residents' religious freedom, because the federal Constitution, and for our purposes in this point, the First Amendment of the Constitution, is a higher legal authority than state law. So if there's a conflict between state and federal law wins. It's the higher legal authority. It supersedes state law when there's a conflict, or you could think of it informally as federal law trumps state law. Now, there are exceptions everywhere in law, but for our purposes, this is a pretty clear and standard legal principle. Well, the Constitution, the First Amendment, talks about religious freedom, but it doesn't say anything about vaccines or vaccine exemptions. And let's face it, there are probably no rights, few if any rights anywhere, that are absolute rights. And historically, our right to refuse vaccines for religious reasons has always been bounded by the state's right to say, oops, never mind, in the event of an infectious disease, outbreak, emergency, or what have you. That is, religious exemptions are fine until the state, in its infinite wisdom, decides, no, it's not fine anymore. And just about every state has laws that, for example, if a child has a religious exemption and there's an outbreak at school, which the CDC admits usually happens in unvaccinated children, but nonetheless, there's an outbreak in school, the vaccinated or the exempt children can be required to stay out of school because they supposedly pose a risk. It doesn't make any sense medically because they are something on the order of 5 to 10 or 15 times the number of non-immune vaccinated kids than there are exempt kids, and exempt kids are not even necessarily immune because you can get natural immunity and without even developing symptoms. So the idea that the exempt children have to stay home has nothing to do with medicine or science. It has to do with a fear-based policy that seeks to punish people who would dare to exercise the exemption, or with a complete misunderstanding and misinterpretation on the part of health authorities and the politicians enacting these rules and laws about the mainstream medical science, let alone the anything falling outside of mainstream medical science, which is where you get into even deeper and more profound truths. But I digress. Let me reel myself back in here. So what have the federal courts said then? I was saying the Constitution doesn't say anything about vaccines, so how do we know what the boundaries of the Constitution are? How do we know what the free exercise of religion is with regard to a state religious exemption law? Well, we don't get to decide that, not you and I. This is something that is decided by the courts. When we want to know how laws are properly interpreted, how they're properly applied to a specific situation, we look to the courts. And by courts, of course, if you have a conflict and go to court, that's one way to get a decision, to get the court's authoritative ruling on here's how the law is properly interpreted and applied to your specific situation. But fortunately, there's a process that many of us can learn by and gain by without ourselves having to actually go to court, and that is we look at other court cases. Now, sometimes people just have to do things directly or experience it themselves, but I tell you, I am all for learning from other people's difficulties anytime I can. And some courts, not all courts, but some state and federal courts have the ability when they rule in a case to write what they call published opinion. That then becomes legal precedent, which is just a point of reference in the law. And there's lots of legal precedent on vaccine religious exemptions, enough precedent for us to get some really clear guidance and direction from federal courts. And so to put it in a nutshell, what the federal courts have said is you only have to have two things to have a religious exemption to vaccines. In fact, to have religious freedom or right anywhere that the state or federal government gives you a right having to do with religion. But for our purposes with vaccine religious exemptions, the beliefs have to be religious in nature. Now, how that phrase is defined legally, to give a complete answer, is a two-hour consultation. But in brief, when they say religious in nature, that's not just religious meaning you have to be a Jehovah's Witness or a Christian Scientist or Amish or something like that. Religious in nature is really, really broad. It doesn't matter whether or not you belong to a church. It doesn't matter what church or religious organization you belong to. If you do belong to one, what matters is your personal interpretation of your religion. So that's the starting place. It's really, really broad. Religious in nature, and it has to be sincerely held. Well, of course, you can't have a religious exemption if your beliefs aren't religious, and you can't have a religious exemption if your beliefs are fraudulent, if they're not sincere. But after that, it's pretty broad. Now, there are difficulties for people who are in situations where they have to state their beliefs, because a lot of what most people do in that situation from a very reasonable common sense place will take them into some of what I call legal pitfalls. That is, when it comes to the specific beliefs that do or don't qualify as religious under the law, that is a tricky area. So if you're in a situation where you're dealing with having to state your religious beliefs, and sometimes you do and sometimes you don't, just depends on the situation. But that's where I recommend you get a hold of an attorney, because you can very quickly and easily shoot yourself in the foot. And if you're in a situation where the authorities involved have authority to scrutinize your beliefs, you want to make sure you have that bulletproof statement of beliefs so that you don't end up losing an exemption that you may truly qualify for but just didn't apply for in the most effective way. But again, as a starting point, religious and sincere, those are the two requirements. And the state is free to say, well, we're not going to check to see if it's sincere or not, or we're not going to check to see if it's religious. Anybody who says they have a religious exemption. In other words, they can be more lenient than the Constitution's minimum requirements of religious and sincere. But they cannot go above and beyond and add additional requirements. Because as soon as they do that, they're crossing that constitutional line. So it really is that simple. So when states as Washington, Oregon, and California have done, when they start adding these new requirements as it pertains to people with religious objections, requirements like you have to go get a signature from a doctor, or you have to get a lecture from a doctor, or watch a video about vaccines, or any of that kind of nonsense. I say nonsense because it has absolutely nothing to do with religious beliefs. You know, religious beliefs are not about whether vaccines are good or bad scientifically. They're about whether or not God allows you to vaccinate or some other qualifying religious basis. So it doesn't even pass the common sense test to make people with religious objections go through educational procedures. But this is what is happening in the West Coast states, and I submit to you that if we do not stand up and fight this rapidly and now, we're going to see this spreading all over the country. And we are losing constitutional rights in many arenas rapidly in very recent years and months and currently. And this is a trend that is, it's not just an isolated event here and there, it's becoming a trend in many arenas in and outside of the vaccine issue. And folks, we need to wake up, and we need to do more than just be aware of it and talk with people who agree with this and say, isn't this awful? Do you want to go get a drink? We need to become legislatively active, and one of the quickest, simplest, easiest ways to do that in the vaccine issue is to join the NVIC's advocacy portal. That's at NV as in Victor, IC, advocacy.org, NVIC, advocacy.org. I have talked my way quickly through the first half hour, as I thought I perhaps would. I'm going to go to break here, and we'll be back right after the end of the first half hour with myself, Alan Phillips, vaccine rights attorney, and my wonderful co-host, Debbie Brook, founder of Homeopathy World Community Radio. You're listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. We will be back shortly. Please stay with us.
Vaccines are required for students, employees, immigrants, military members, and international travel. Do you know how to legally avoid them? This is vaccine rights attorney and Freedomizer radio host Alan Phillips. My vaccine exemption ebook can help you avoid the mistakes that have cost others their exemption rights. Get the authoritative guide to vaccine legal exemptions, an ebook available at freedomizerradio.com and vaccinerights.com.
Let freedom ring throughout the
land. We are so pleased to announce ESP Botanicals is now sponsoring Freedomizer Radio. They have a bath and body line of products made for keeping your skin beautiful and healthy, but it's also for psoriasis, eczema, rosacea, and dermatitis treatment. They are meticulously prepared skincare products made from the best botanicals available. Committed to buying only from the growers when they can and using the highest quality cold-pressed oils, botanical organic additives, the best steam-expressed essential oils, and the least processed carrier oils that are available in today's marketplace. Pamper yourself or someone special in your life. Give the gift of beautiful, glowing skin. ESPBotanicals.com. Thank you so much for supporting us at Freedomizer Radio.
You know the Constitution like the back of your hand. You've read books, listened to podcasts, attended lectures, surfed websites, and watched videos. You've made liberty your life's goal. But something seems to be missing. Stickers from LibertyStickers.com.
Exercise your freedom of speech with the world's most dangerous bumper stickers. That's LibertyStickers.com. But wait. There's more. You can buy Liberty stickers wholesale. Get them for 99 cents each when you put 100 or more in your shopping cart in any combination. Sell them or give them away. They're great for gun shows, flea markets, fairs, outreach, and more. Earn extra money, promote freedom, and spread the word. Need custom stickers, labels, or decals for your organization or business? Liberty Stickers makes them. Go to LibertyStickers.com to order or call 877-873-9626. LibertyStickers.com, the world's most dangerous stickers.
Hello everyone, Proof here again. I want to let you know about our brand new sponsor, Silver Leaf Tea. Now as you guys know that have listened to me for years, I am a tea aficionado. I have hundreds of different flavors and styles at my house, and Silver Leaf has exactly the kind of stuff that I look for. I love loose tea, great antioxidants, I just love the taste of it, and this Silver Leaf has black, they have green, they have white, they have organic. Great for hot tea and iced tea. Silver Leaf Tea, it's right on our website, freedomizerradio.com. And check it out and order it. Silver Leaf Tea.
Get ready for the epic new documentary adventure ride of your life. Shade the Motion Picture. A view into the globalist domain. And Embellus and Burma's film.
Nothing in this world works the way you think it does. Nothing. Governments do not operate the way you think they do. Banks do not do what you think they do. The police department is not here for what you think it is. Nothing in your world works the way you think it does.
We are going to let them know that their world government has been identified, and they thought they just cornered the world economy to bring in a worldwide police state, but instead, it's going to bring them down.
You have to stand up. Speak up. Speak out.
Shade the Motion Picture. Order your copy of the DVD today at ShadeTheMotionPicture.com.
We are back with Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. with vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips and my lovely co-host, founder of Homeopathy World Community, Debbie Brook. Debbie, are you there with us?
Welcome, everyone. There's some activity in the chat on Freedomizer Radio, and we are simulcasting both at Freedomizer Radio on Blog Talk Radio and at Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio. It's great to have lots and lots of listeners, and hopefully we will hear some feedback, comments. Call in to 347-324-3704 or via, I assume, if you go to Blog Talk Radio, you can click the blue Skype button. And so I had some comments about what you were speaking about at the beginning of the show, if I may.
Absolutely. Please go ahead.
All right. At the very beginning, you were asking what are the reasons for people to have that people desire to have exemptions, and why aren't the officials, the people in authority, the government, our representatives, why aren't they listening closely so that they can understand what's going on and maybe reformulate the legislation and the actions that they take and what maybe respond responsibly to the people's voice. And so I have a couple of little lists. I make little lists, okay? The first one is the broader reason of the people want freedom of choice to maintain their First Amendment rights, their constitutional rights. And in today's social networking and era, although people are speaking out, I don't think that they feel they're being heard when things like Monsanto have more power than Whole Foods does to say we want to have our foods labeled. And it gets overturned somehow, some back door, some closed door secrecy going on, and they had to back out of it. I don't know if you heard about that.
I did, and it was very disturbing because it just felt like caving into me, and it's suggestive of something more going on than we're really hearing through the media. You know, what was the backdoor, backroom conversation? What was the real pressure? You know, somebody suggested once, and I have absolutely no source of information or objective information to back it up, so I'll use this purely as a hypothetical to make the point, that someone suggested that there was an email that revealed that Justice Roberts had been coerced into ruling a certain way on a Supreme Court case, which created the majority in a way that in reality was not consistent with prior precedent and current constitutional law. And you have to wonder whether that particular example was true or not. We certainly have historically evidence of that kind of thing going on, and it's very clearly and obviously going on in one manner or degree in the vaccine arena. You know, the short, cynical, but I think absolutely objectively true answer to the question of why is the response to restrict exemptions rather than engage in an open public discourse is because to do that would undermine the entire current policy and law, that the truth about what's going on with science, with vaccines, the science and lack of science collectively, does not support the current policy and, in fact, supports something radically different, which would ultimately be an end to or profound decrease in the multi-billion dollar international pharmaceutical vaccine industry.
Things like people giving handshakes and winks or whatever so that you don't see what's going on is not what Obama promised of transparency.
Well, when we have that promise of transparency, we get hopeful, but you have to wonder if the transparency promise itself is just another layer obfuscating true transparency for what's going on underneath it. You know, oh, he says we have transparency now, so everything's okay. Clearly, we don't have transparency, and we all know, and it's sort of funny, Debbie, if it's fair to use that word as opposed to tragic and horrific, but we all know that politicians make promises to get elected. We all know that you know, some percentage of those promises are not going to come to fruition for whatever reason or combination of reasons, and yet we hear politicians in the campaign stage making promises, we still want to hear them as though they are something that can be kept and that will be kept. And
do you think that people are still gullible?
I think...
Or do they believe what they're being told anymore?
I think gullibility plays into it, but I think, and maybe these are different facets in the same gym, so to speak, but I think it's perhaps more a reflection of our optimism and hopefulness, that we hope things will get better. Mm-hmm. We want things to get better. So we're looking for someone who is saying something that we can believe and that we you know, hope will happen. Mm-hmm. And there certainly is a heavy dose of naivete or gullibility that can go with that, or at least retrospectively, when those promises don't bear out, we look back and can reasonably say, well, you know, gosh, are we just gullible? Were we just naive? Is this something we should have ignored? So I think we're in a stage in terms of the evolution of our political processes where we're sort of transitioning. You know, more and more people are disillusioned, and more people are realistic about what really can be trusted and can't be trusted, and yet we're still
want to believe that things can be fixed. Let me throw this out, and I know we have a caller, so I'm attentive to that. You know, we know that the vaccine manufacturers have a law passed so that they're not liable for any harm that they do, even though there is the vaccine. They can go to court and try and get money. What is that organization? Is it VAERS?
There's VAERS, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, which is only it's a volunteer system, so it's only a place for reporting a suspected adverse event. It's not an indication of with any given report. It's not an indication that it actually was an adverse event from vaccines, but it's Of course, people are not going to be reporting there unless they think it was.
But you can get compensated, right? Okay, so
right.
I'm going to move.
Separate program, the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, where we've got actually a federal court system, a division of federal courts that does nothing other than look at vaccine injuries.
Okay, so there's a system in place that's if you are really truly injured by vaccines, and they have been giving out money to compensate these people. Now, June 24th, which is only a couple days ago, 2013, the Supreme Court, it says, nixes state suits against generics, which means that makers of generic drugs cannot be sued under state law for side effects of their products. This is a ruling by the Supreme Court on Monday, angering patients' rights advocates. In a 5-4 decision, the justices overturned a multi-million-dollar award to a woman who suffered damages from a generic medication, noting that federal law prohibits drug makers from making changes in their warning labels without the approval of the FDA. And it goes on further. If you want to look up the case, it's called Mutual Pharmaceutical versus Bartlett. And so it seems as if this path we're on is protecting not the patient who could have harm from drugs or from vaccines, but the manufacturers. And that's why we see these cartoons with a picture of a bed and two people in it. One is labeled the government and the other one's the manufacturer. And then next to it is a picture of a coffin, an open coffin. They haven't died yet, I guess, with a patient. So that's another aspect of why the people are feeling they're not being heard, even though they're trying to speak out and tell their representatives what's important to them.
Well, Debbie, I hadn't heard of that case, and that's just in basic concept very disturbing. I always try to be careful when hearing about a ruling in a case because okay. Sometimes the outcome in a case on sort of a common sense or gut level just seems wrong, and yet you can read the court's written opinion where they explain the legal reasoning, and sometimes they have followed sound legal reasoning to get to their end result. And what that really means in some cases is that it's not a judicial issue, really, it's a legislative issue. In other words, if the courts follow the law and come out with a decision that really isn't a good decision, then what that means is that the legislature needs to jump in and fix things. It's not necessarily an indication that the court didn't follow the law, although there is politics in the judicial system just like there is anywhere else, so there's no guarantee that courts will always follow, you know, make the right decision.
I think I'm reading the actual syllabus of this case,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it seems as if it's almost like they got off on a technicality. That's my opinion. That's not, you know, whatever. It just says that once a drug is approved, a manufacturer is prohibited from making any major changes to the qualitative or quantitative formulation of the drug product, including active ingredients, or in the specifications provided in the approved application. Generic manufacturers are also prohibited from making any unilateral changes to a drug's label. And what happened was this respondent, the claimant, I guess, I don't know what you call it legally, was prescribed Clinoril, a brand name version of non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug NSAID, Sulidac, for her shoulder. And her pharmacist dispensed a generic form of this drug manufactured by the petitioner, which was Mutual Pharmaceutical. And the respondent developed an acute case of this disease, toxic epidermal necrosis, and she's disfigured and disabilities and nearly blind. At the time of the prescription, this drug, Sulindax, label did not specifically refer to the toxic epidermal necrolysis, whatever it is, necrolysis. Yeah, it's probably you know, eating away of the skin. By 2005, the FDA recommended changing the label. So it's kind of like, because they didn't change the label, they're not liable at the time. Maybe it's
Yeah, but it's, what it sounds like, and I'm guessing here because I haven't read the case, but what it sounds like is that there was a claim saying that there wasn't proper notice of the potential adverse events, that that the manufacturer should be liable. And what the manufacturer is saying is, well, we couldn't give proper notice because the FDA wouldn't let us, which makes me wonder if she has a potential suit against the FDA. You know, did the FDA do its job in a lawful
manner? It went to the federal court. I had this
concept that is this thought that has come up to me over and over again over the years. You know, in law school, I heard all about variations and situations where people get off on technicalities, and the law professors tend to take this, or this one in particular that comes to mind, tend to take this position of how important it is for these technicalities to protect rights and so forth. You know, and it's like, hey, if the drunk driver gets off on a technicality and we know, other than the technicality, that he was driving drunk, how does it help society to let him back on the road again? You know, that's the sort of idea that comes up. And I have this notion that if somebody waved a magic wand and I was going to get to reinvent the legal system, that I would create something within the system that nobody gets off on a technicality if the evidence is there to support a just outcome. That, you know, if the police made a mistake by not reading somebody their Miranda rights, for example, that they should not be free to make any mistakes without penalty. But if you mm-hmm. have the evidence that shows the person committed the crime, then that person still needs to have their appropriate punishment for their behavior. And if the way you got there was because a policeman didn't follow the rules, then that policeman needs to be penalized as well for not following the rules. But you don't say because the policeman made a mistake that we pretend like the criminal didn't do anything wrong. And I just have a great, great objection to these, you know, get off on a technicality things that come up. If there was some, you know, if somebody was so hurt so bad as what you describe is, and they were following in good faith the doctor's recommendation and prescription, and the pharmacist properly filled the prescription, and there was some horrible side effect. I mean, you know, pharmaceutical companies have to worry about a profit like anybody else, and I don't have any problem with them or anyone else making a profit. I do have a problem with them making a profit, though, to the extent that it comes at the expense of people's lives and quality of lives. If they are going to engage in something as high risk as developing products that can injure and kill people, then they need to have a correspondingly high level of accountability for that. There is no excuse with vaccines or any other drug product, in my opinion, for a pharmaceutical company being allowed to injure and kill people with impunity. And I think it's a horrifically misguided systems that we have in place right now that the industry can infiltrate and run and control and direct government policy and law to the extent that it has and does. There needs to be a complete and total barrier, a clear, bright red line, black and white barrier between industry and government. They are entirely different realms, and never should industry be partnering, quote unquote, with government to achieve government ends. You know, that needs to be, as soon as you have any kind of conflict of interest there, or potential, even the appearance of conflict of interest, you have lost the integrity of the system. And we have a system
can
now
I,
that...
Can I put a little bit of closure on this case?
Sure.
Because I don't want to leave people hanging on this. And you can look it up, you know, supremecourt.gov. It's an opinion piece on the 2005, I said, the FDA recommended changing all NSAID labeling to contain a more explicit toxic epidermal necrolysis warning. The respondent sued Mutual in New Hampshire state court, and Mutual removed the case to the federal court. A jury found Mutual liable on the respondent's design defect claim and awarded her $21 million. So it sounds like the federal court gave her her due there, but something was amiss still that why the author of the opinion piece is saying that the makers of generic drugs cannot be sued under state law for side effects of their products. So I'm kind of up in the air with that. If she did get, the jury awarded her $1 million, that was upheld in the circuit court, but the Supreme Court said the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act allows only the FDA to make labeling changes and supersedes the state law, including the one in New Hampshire, that tries to force drug makers to make labeling or design changes when safety issues arise. So I guess he's kind of saying that only the FDA can give permission for a label to be changed even when they know that there's a safety issue?
Well, part of what's involved here is has to do and stems from what's called the Supremacy Clause in the Constitution. That clause basically says that the federal government is a higher legal authority than state government. So if there's a conflict between state and federal law, then the federal law wins. And so part of the issue here is, what authority do we go by here? What law do we go by? Are we going by the state law or do we go by the federal law? And if there's a conflict, the general rule is that the federal law wins. And so it came down to a question of the FDA, which is a federal agency, versus state laws. But I think the larger question here for us as a society is, what kind of freedom should we be giving or allowing pharmaceutical companies to have to injure and kill us with impunity? You know, where
or maybe
is the accountability?
Maybe
I mean,
need to let them put the warning label on. They tried to have our cigarettes have the bad pictures on them, and they struck that down, even though they do have it in Europe. Hey, there's been somebody waiting for a long time. You want to let that person on now?
Well, we actually lost one caller, and I just want to say, if that caller is still listening, please call back in, and we will take your call. Apologize for taking so long. We have another caller, though. Caller from area code 212, you are on the air. Please tell us your name and let us know what your question or comment is.
Well, my comment is, you know, if you change the law and sue everybody, somebody's going to lose out. Jamie Gordon, you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes, we do hear you.
It's absolutely a fair question. You know, does there have to be some limit to the pharmaceutical industry's liability if we presume, let's give them the benefit of the doubt, that they're working to bring drugs that can help people to market, and does there have to be some, you know, limit to their liability? Because if they're liable for every single thing that ever goes wrong with any of their drugs, that will never have any of their drugs on the market. You know, where's the proper balance? And that is certainly a question that could be debated and deliberated at great length. And you're absolutely right. We'll never come up with a solution that everybody agrees with. So I think it's absolutely a valid question and an inherently difficult one to resolve. Capture at least the general direction or essence of your question? Was that what you were pointing at?
Well,
okay, Alan.
You.
Oh, go ahead.
Do you hear me?
We had a little delay.
Go
ahead.
You know, if y'all try to change laws to everybody, you're never getting nowhere. The cost of medical costs is so outrageous. Nobody can afford any kind of mess. If you turn around and have to worry about being sued every time you turn around making something, yes, they need to make warning labels. Yes, they need to make sure people don't suffer. If something happens and they do, you know, sell millions and millions of dollars, you know, yes, give them something. I ain't talking about a couple of dollars, but, you know, maybe $1 million or something, or, you know, the rest of their lives. But, like I said, again, you take any kind of medicine you take.
You're taking a risk with any kind of medicine. That's true, because every single medicine has warning literature on it about the side effects. That's what drugs do. They attempt to help one specific issue, but in the same time, they're affecting the entire physical body, all your systems. And you can't stop that from happening, so you're going to have what they call side effects, what I call effects. They're effects, and they know about them.
Yeah, you know, there's
they need to tell what they might be.
Yeah, there's a real interesting general legal principle that some jurisdictions recognize in their laws, a principle that they call assumption of the risk. And what it boils down to is that, at least in some states, even if one party is negligent, if the other party had awareness or knowledge, or should have had awareness or knowledge, they can be deemed to have assumed the risk. And if there's a label, you know, on a drug that says, here are the side effects, and you say, okay, I'm willing to take that risk, I'm going to go ahead and take the drug anyway, then it really seems hard to me that anybody could hold the pharmaceutical company responsible for the side effects. Well, we told you about the side effects, and you're the one who decided to take that risk. You know, we're all adults here, and
nobody forced you to take it.
No, but there is another factor, though, and that is the vast majority of non-medical people will rely on their doctor's recommendation. And the doctors are provided incentive by the pharmaceutical industry to promote the pharmaceutical industry profits. So we're not always getting a fair, clear, objective recommendation from the doctor. The doctor, I mean, I've had a doctor tell me that, no, vaccines don't really hurt anybody or they don't kill anybody. I've been told that. I was either lied to by that doctor or else that doctor had no idea what he was talking about. And vaccines are not the only time when this happens, but it is a classic example. And so, you know, is it really fair to say someone assumes the risk if a doctor tells them, oh, there aren't any risks? So it's not quite as clear-cut as it might first seem when we say, well, you know, you knew what the risks were. But it's even more complicated in this particular case that Debbie has brought up today, because it appears that the label didn't even provide risks. And the reason that it didn't provide risks is because the FDA wouldn't allow it until it had gone through whatever procedure it needed to go through. So if I understand what Debbie is saying about this case, it's even more complicated, and that this woman really didn't know what the risks were, couldn't know what the risks were, because the proper labeling to warn her couldn't be on there. And if I'm understanding that correctly, I can't imagine a more clear-cut case on a common sense level for this woman should be compensated. But apparently the way that the law applied in this situation was that she shouldn't be compensated. But the end result, you know, the bottom line here, if somebody is acting in good faith, this woman has a condition, she goes to the doctor writes a prescription to try and help her, nobody's expecting this woman to be hurt further. But the bottom line is she is hurt so bad that the lower court awarded millions of dollars. That's pretty serious injury. And for her to come away at the end of this with nothing, without a dime, and whatever it cost her in attorney's fees, and she continues with this condition the rest of her life, on just a common sense level, this seems like a horrible tragedy. And shouldn't we have some system in place? Maybe the manufacturer isn't liable in court, but like at least, like we do with vaccines, at least there's a place you can go to the government and try to get some compensation. Because when you have a severe injury caused by a vaccine or a drug, that's a horrible thing to live with. And if you got that even though you acted in good faith and did all the right things, shouldn't somebody somewhere be helping you out for the rest of your life while you're living with this horrible condition? Just on a common sense level, let's not even talk about for the moment about whose fault it is or who's responsible or whatever, because we can argue that it's nobody's fault or it's her own fault or it's the pharmaceutical industry's fault. We could assign some degree of fault to anybody or nobody here. But what we have at the end of the day is somebody with a horrible health condition who deserves some help, because it's nothing you know, bad or horrible or wrong on her part that caused it to happen. And I just, you know, I think as minimum there should be some sort of compensation system in there. But I think, and maybe I'm biased and I'm certainly willing to hear another view, I think the pharmaceutical industry knows that the business they're in is creating products that, while we hope will help people, will also injure and kill some of those people. And with those kind of stakes known in advance by the companies producing the products, I think there ought to be some accountability on the part of those companies. There should be some very strong incentive for them to create products as safe as they can. But right now with vaccines, there's no incentive whatsoever. In fact, there is disincentive to create safe vaccines because they don't have to pay for it. So I think there's some serious problems in the system. But I do want to be real clear that your point, you're absolutely is merit in your point that we need to look at this from all sides and factor in everybody's needs and interests and try to find a system, you know, that strikes a proper balance between all the different needs and responsibilities and so forth. So it's absolutely a valid point.
Okay.
We're at a break point here, and thank you, Colin, very much for calling in. We're going to go to break.
People, he's going to start us to sing a song in a second. You have a promo. I don't hear anything playing, so I'll just talk until I hear something, unless I've just lost my sound. Is Alan there? Hopefully, maybe we'll talk about Australia.
Okay. Were you not hearing me in the last minute, too? Okay, I must have must have hit the wrong button. Gosh, and I was talking so eloquently and articulately. You should have heard it. It was fabulous. I was just saying, Debbie, that we have got to go to break now. And that you're listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. with Homeopathy World Community founder Debbie Brock and vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips, and invites folks to stay with us as we go to a short break here. And we will be back shortly.
Very good.
This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. Warriors, you are not alone. There are pockets of resistance all around the planet. We are at the brink. Read about it in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available now at newsstands everywhere. The Sovereign is a monthly 24-page tabloid newspaper featuring incendiary content about life during wartime in the age of Obama. Warriors, keep to date every month. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available at newsstands everywhere. This alert is for all you boppers out there in the big city, all you street people with an ear for the action. This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. This is Mercy. Mine will be the last voice you'll ever hear. Don't be alarmed.
Hello again, Freedomist. Proof is here, and I want to talk to you about a brand new soda maker called SodaStream. Now, the Proof House has had SodaStream for about a year, and we love the thing. We use it quite often. With SodaStream, you can have fresh-made soda in seconds. One of the big things we like about it is that there's no high-fructose corn syrup and no aspartame. There's over 60 flavors, or you can create your own. Not just sodas, they also have iced teas and energy drinks. Here at the Proof House, we make egg cream sodas all the time. Some other facts to consider here: there's no electricity, no more wasted bottles and cans, and the most important thing is that it tastes great. keep in mind, too, this is a perfect family present for Christmas, or, hey, just surprise the family with something great. Also, for a limited time, there's free shipping, so go to freedomizerradio.com and look for the SodaStream link, and I hope you check out the product. That's SodaStream right on freedomizerradio.com.
Want to spread awareness to your neighbors, family, and friends about what is going on in our country today? It may be things you already know, like the large number of FEMA camps spread around this country to lock up citizens like you and me. What legislators are doing to strip states and people of their sovereign rights. Or legislation giving states the power to force vaccinate under a declared state of emergency. Do your neighbors understand what is going on? William Lewis Films offers the perfect tools to inform our population about this government's tyrannical shift from a constitutional republic to a despotic democracy. Films like 9-1-1 Ripple Effect, Beyond Treason, One Nation Under Siege, Washington You're Fired, Camp FEMA, Enemy of the State, Don't Tread on Me, Blood of Patriots, The Ron Paul Uprising, even 9-1-1 in Plain Sight, William's first production, are all available at williamlewisfilms.com. Get your DVDs today at williamlewisfilms.com. Educate against the police state.
Hey guys, Proof here. Guess what? I just got a cell phone. Hey, for everyone that knows me, I'm not a fan of cell phones, but I just signed up with a company called Solavay. And Solavay is offering a plan right now with unlimited phone, text, and web for only $49 a month. Plus, if you refer a friend or two, you get a discounted rate for everyone you refer for as long as they have Solavay, not just for the first month, but for the whole time that person has Solavay. You sign up enough people, and Solavay pays you every month. What other cell phone company is going to pay you for service? Anyway, go to Solavay.com/freedomizer. That's Solavay, Solavei.com/freedomizer. Learn all about it. Plus, and another kicker, if you sign up three people under you, you'll get another month for free as well. Plus, they're going to pay you cash. Anyway, Solavay.com/freedomizer.
We are back. You're listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. with Homeopathy World Community Founder Debbie Bruck and Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips. Debbie,
Are you staying with me here?
Pardon me?
You staying on the line with me here?
I'm here with you. We got one more hour to go here. Now, you're going to finish this out today as usual?
That'd be fine.
Okay, great. Looking forward to that.
I'm ready to talk about anything anybody wants to talk about.
but that summer heat will do it to you, right?
I think that if we want to do any news, although, you know, I still have more points. I think we'll bring them up next week. But the Australia issue, I think, is really important to talk about.
Well,
do you agree or do you want?
No, there's Debbie, there are so many things here. I could close my eyes and pick any one of them that would be things to jump into. Let's go ahead and do that. Let's try to, if we can, I mean, if the conversation goes otherwise, then I'll go with the flow, absolutely. But I was going to say, let's try to touch briefly on a few different things so we can give folks kind of an overview of what's at least some of the issues that are current issues around the country and the world today, because there's just so much going on. But please tell us a little bit about Australia.
It says, Senate to anti-vax group, pack up and go home. The Senate today, or it was the other day, June 25th, passed a motion by Greens health spokesperson, Dr. Richard D. Natale, calling on the Australian Vaccination Network, AVN, to disband and to cease its harmful and unscientific scare campaign against vaccines. There you go.
Yeah, I mean, and what can you say about that? It was a unanimous vote by the Senate. Now, I don't know, I'm not familiar with the Australian political system, so I'm not quite sure exactly what that means, but it is disturbing to hear that there'd be a unanimous decision by any political group that is in a blatant exercise of politics lacking truth, trying to criticize an organization that is full of people who have spent years researching meticulously vaccine concerns, and I'm sure would love nothing more than to have an open, transparent, objective public conversation. Of course, this is an attempt by politicians to stifle the very thing that they are there to do, which is to look out for the best interest of their constituents. And
They're brushing them aside, basically. Well, they're shutting them up.
They're squashing them. You know, the visual brushing aside is just a way too weak of a metaphor here. They're stepping on them and squashing them. It's, and I'm sorry, I don't mean to be grossly graphic here, but it's just disgusting any time that politicians use their position under a false pretense of doing what's right and good for their constituents by actually trying to claim
them. Unfortunately, without specifically using curse words or name-calling, by saying that the AVN is spreading misinformation, they're calling them liars, are they not?
They're going farther than that. They're claiming that they are causing harm because of their lies.
But
you would not hear any one of these politicians saying, you know, let's get together and debate this and find out who really got the truth here. You know, they are playing judge and jury here, so to speak, by just flat out declaring that somebody who's got a different point of view is wrong. And what is certainly implied here is that they are either, by deductive reasoning, they're either ignorant or they are influenced by the pharmaceutical industry and are acting on behalf of that industry rather than on behalf of their constituents. But either way, they are fundamentally failing in their responsibility as political representatives, and in so doing, bringing shame and evidencing a blatant lack of integrity for that system. And I am deeply disturbed by what this means or may mean for the AVN, who is fighting tirelessly for years to bring truth to this arena. And the response to that is nothing more than a completely shameless political maneuver to try
one of the things that doesn't make any sense to me, and then we'll move to the next thing, is that it says one of the reasons is it notes the low vaccination rates in certain parts of Australia. And if you look at the vaccination rate, it says in NSW, New South Wales, it's 92. The average vaccination rate is 92%, which I think sounds pretty high. He says there are pockets in the eastern suburbs and northern North Shore. The immunization rate has fallen to below 85%. I still think that's high. I'm sure that it's much lower in many parts of the United States.
Well, and this is the same thing I was saying at the beginning of today's show, that the assumption that dropping immunization rates is necessarily a problem is itself a flawed assumption. You know, here in the U.S., the CDC admits that most outbreaks occur in vaccinated people. Now, they don't admit that by meaning to say that vaccines, you know, don't work and we should not vaccinate anymore because, you know, they don't work. That's not what they're saying. What they're saying is that vaccines don't work in everybody. And so some of the people who are vaccinated aren't protected, and so those people are then inevitably, some of them are going to contract the diseases they were vaccinated for. But the percentage of people who are vaccinated whose vaccines don't work is many times that of the exempt or non-immunizing populations.
Segue into the flu. It doesn't work.
Yeah, well, the flu is sort of like the king of the non-working vaccines because we have multiple mainstream sources saying that the flu vaccines have little or no effectiveness whatsoever, and even the highest mainstream source that I have found in recent history says they're only about 60% effective. You'll never get herd immunity if a vaccine is only 60% effective. It's just not possible. So at that point, you've lost any rational scientific medical basis for saying that everyone needs to get vaccinated anyway. And what doctors fall back on in that one is, well, it's better to have a little protection than no protection. Well, not if, along with that comes a little disability, a little death caused by the vaccines. So the,
and there are numerous people speaking out about this and making videos about influenza and actually giving information about how the immune system actually works. And based on that, if you educate yourself on how your immune system works, you'll understand why vaccines can't possibly work. They bypass the natural method of the immune system. And besides all the other stuff that's going in, originally vaccines, they would have, they would scratch your skin and put a little sample of the pox on or the discharge, the disease. Now it's completely different.
Well, and I actually saw a real interesting article just in the last few days that says new immune system discovered. Researchers, I think
where's
it was
that?
In San Diego, where they were looking at what goes on in the mucus in different parts of the bodies, and they've actually are claiming to have discovered a whole entire separate immune system or component of perhaps the body's total immune systems or immune functionality. So it's a fascinating article. I believe it's linked
with
my other vaccine
yeah.
articles at the pandemicresponseproject.com website. I encourage folks to take a look at that. Let me jump over to another topic or two here, Debbie, because you know, you and I can take any one thing and stretch it over an hour or a half hour easily enough, and it's wonderful to do that. But I wanted to try and touch on just a couple of things that are also going on here. One of the recent, in fact, I've seen maybe a few different articles talking about this, but the particular article I'm looking at comes from VaccineLiberationArmy.com. They have a regular ongoing list of vaccine news items. They're a really good source for information about what's going on around the U.S. and around the world. This particular article talking about how on June 14th, the health ministry in Japan withdrew its recommendation for vaccination to protect girls against cervical cancer, the HPV vaccines, after hundreds complained about possible side effects, including long-term pain and numbness. And apparently it's pretty rare for the ministry to withdraw a recommendation for a vaccine. In this case, one used regularly by local governments, and that's spelled out in the law. Now, girls can still get the vaccine there for free, but the medical institutions must now inform them beforehand that the ministry does not recommend it. So I'll just refer folks to, again, to pandemicresponseproject.com, the news link at the top right of that page, for a list of links, including a link to this Vaccine Liberation Army article called
So,
June 2013 Health Minister Withdraws Cervical Vaccine Recommendation.
Yeah, I have another one in the Tokyo Times. It's HPV vaccine seen differently by Japan and the U.S. And that was kind of a question that I might ask is, does the American, the U.S. Ministry of Health look at what others in other countries are doing regarding these vaccines?
My impression is that America and Americans generally are the peak of arrogance. We see ourselves as better than everyone else in the world. We're the leaders. Everyone needs to follow us. We don't follow anyone else. And the reason I say that as a subjective impression in part, but there's some objective evidence to back that up. For example, we administer more vaccines here in the U.S. than any other nation on the planet. And I would submit to you that the reason for that, two main reasons. One, because we have more ability to pay for vaccines here than most other countries, and we're gullible. We're able to be manipulated in such a way as to have us accept that, at least at a level that it has been able to occur. I mean, the number of vaccines we administer here in the U.S. is twice the average of 30 other Western nations. So it's it's really disturbing. We're not going to be looking to other countries to say, what are they doing? Let's follow suit, because to lower the number of immunizations would mean to cut into pharmaceutical profits. And if you're an international pharmaceutical company, where do you want to push your products the strongest? You want to do that in the countries that have the most ability to pay. Now, you look at our gazillion-dollar, you know, national debt, and it's hard to say we have money to pay for anything, because we don't from that perspective. But apparently, that's not the driving force here, at least not at this point. The driving force is something else. But we also obviously have the ability to mandate vaccines, whereas in Canada, the UK, Australia, I believe New Zealand as well, I don't think any of these countries mandate vaccines, although there certainly have been attempts and are attempts to create mandates in each of these countries, and certainly to create policy that has the equivalent result of mandates to the full extent possible. So it's not like things are rosy in any of these other countries in the immunization issue. I don't think it's any better, and maybe even worse sometimes when I look at what's going on in Australia. But there is a distinct difference when you can mandate the product and you've got laws that hold you free from liability. Who wouldn't want a piece of that pie from a purely cold, amoral, unethical, calculating point of view?
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens. You know, as the HPV vaccine incurs more injury in the United States, when it will turn the corner legislatively here and for the medical professionals to take a look at, see, count up the numbers of people who have been injured. You want to go on with the guest post, crackdown on those who don't vaccinate? Wow, this is unbelievable. A response to Art Kaplan by Mary Holland, J.D.?
Right, and I just want to make a real quick comment. Mary Holland is a wonderful woman. She's a law school professor. She's quite knowledgeable and skillful in the law. She's been really active over many years with autism issues and concerns, and is very much aware of vaccines, problems, and issues. And Mary and I both responded to this independently of one another, and my article was published on Natural News and some other sites, and Mary and I came up, I think, both with some really good points, and they were totally different points. So I think it's fascinating not only to look at what Mary has come up with here, which is just, you know, everything Mary does is fabulous. She's just quite skillful and knowledgeable. But what was particularly fascinating to me, just because I had also completely independent of her addressed the issue as well, is that she came up with things that didn't even occur to me at all, and I was just fascinated. She makes a compelling argument. You want to mention a couple of the points briefly here?
That was really a nice introduction to her, and it's, you know, to me, it's he said, she said. You know, one person puts, you know, their foot in the ground and says, vaccines are completely safe. There's nothing that can hurt anybody. And the unvaccinated person who is out there and in proximity to the vaccinated person and gets them, and then the vaccinated person comes down with a disease, that the unvaccinated person would be liable. And this is like baloney, because number one, you're not going to know who, where, what you contracted any disease from. There's no way of ever knowing. And you can't pinpoint the person. And that's one, you know, staunch belief that these vaccines are completely safe. And how could that be if when you get a vaccine, you're not protected? I mean, if that's what it's supposed to do. And for the thousands and thousands of people who say, I got a vaccine or my child got a vaccine, and immediately following, they caused an injury. And in all the literature, it even itemizes all of the injuries that they can incur. So that's a bunch of baloney. Sorry, Dr. Kaplan. And that's
you know, you're being very polite, but I'm going to tell you, you know, I don't think you need to apologize. Of all people, for a medical ethicist, for an ethicist to be completely missing the elephant in the room on this issue, you know, and to talk about the mice in the corner, the elephant being that vaccines cause injury and death, and then they are simply unsafe. Now, of course, Mary and I both hit on that point, but she hit on things that I didn't include in my discussion about it. So she talked about the 2011 Supreme Court case, which just sort of underscored what was already said in the 1986 Vaccine Injury Compensation Act, that vaccines are, quote, unavoidably unsafe, unquote.
Mm-hmm.
Unavoidably unsafe.
Unless,
so not,
unless you take an exemption or a waiver, and then you can avoid it because that's your right to determine the risk that you personally or for your children, if you're a guardian, will take.
Yeah, so
I'm also going to wave hello from Larry, who's in the chat. He says, hello, Alan.
Hey,
go
Larry.
Ahead.
Great to have you with us today. Yeah, I mean, for Dr. Kaplan, for the Australian Senate, for Paul Offit, anyone else who is slamming the terrible, awful anti-vaccine people, you know, these people always just completely bypass, entirely step over, and they must have some really long legs because this is a high hurdle here. They just step right over this unavoidably unsafe, which both the U.S. Congress and the U.S. Supreme Court have underscored. And so it's not like you can have this debate about whether or not vaccines have any sort of safety problem. You know, the $100 million on average, approximately, that the federal government pays out to vaccine victims or the families in the cases of where vaccines have killed children. These are not debatable
events. I don't understand how he can, she's saying a tiny minority continue to put the rest of us at risk. How is that possible?
Well, of course, it's not possible under the herd immunity theory. The herd immunity theory tells us as long as most people are vaccinated, everyone's protected. And over the years, the percentage goes up. Every time an outbreak occurs in a more highly vaccinated population, they say, oh, it takes more than 70%, it takes 80%. Oh, it takes more than 80%, it takes 90%. And we've just about gotten to the point now where they're saying, oh, well, it takes 95% or whatever. You know, they seem to be really fighting that 100% vaccination mark as a requirement for herd immunity. But the bottom line is that herd immunity is a failed theory. It may have merit in terms of wild infection, but in terms of vaccines, you don't get herd immunity with vaccines. I mean, if herd immunity were an issue, and Dr. Russell Blaylock, a neurosurgeon, credit him for this, it's one of those things that when you hear it, you say, oh, duh, of course. But it didn't occur to me before I read him having said it. And so I appreciate very much his bringing it to my and others' attention. But the bottom line, he's pointing out that a substantial number of adults in our society today are the so-called baby boomers, people who have not been vaccinated in anywhere from 10 or 20 to 30, 40, or 50 years. And the prevailing mainstream medical wisdom today tells us that vaccine protection lasts anywhere from around 2 to 10 years, according to Dr. Blaylock. So we've had no vaccine protection, we adult baby boomers who comprise more than 50% of the population. We've had no vaccine protection for decades, and there are not disease outbreaks rampant all over the country in the adult population or any other population as a result of that. So there just isn't any real merit to the whole idea of herd immunity, and yet that's the reason that everybody has to be vaccinated. That's the reason you don't get to decide what goes into your body, because your vaccine protects everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
But it's how
so you get to lose your right.
Yeah, we've had many documented instances in the medical literature of outbreaks in highly and even fully vaccinated populations. So even if vaccines work, they're not reliable to work.
Mm-hmm. No, the vaccines actually push those viruses to mutate to a new form, so they're the resistant to anything you think it's going to work with anyway. We're the problem.
Yeah. Debbie, we're up against a break again here.
Go ahead.
With your permission, I'd like to run some of the what they call ad promos here that talk about some of the other shows on Freedomizer Radio. And then we'll come back with you, Debbie, and let you...
Okay, you can stay with me, too, if you like, or you can... I don't know what I'm going to say today. I think there are people out there. If you have a comment, I know somebody wanted to learn a little bit about helping their gums and their teeth. I was going to continue talking about coughs and colds, the lungs. Okay.
Well...
Go ahead.
We'll have something on the order of 3 to 5 minutes here to figure out where we're going to go, and we'll come back. I'll come back after break and probably let you take it sometime shortly after that. You're listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. with Homeopathy World Community founder Debbie Brook and vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips, and often the last half hour of our 2-hour segment. That is every Thursday afternoon at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Debbie talks to us about homeopathy and how you can learn and understand and bring homeopathy into your own life to have more control over your own health care using something that actually works for a change, for those of you who are not already doing it, and a little bit of cynicism there, I suspect. In any case, we're going to go to break here, and we'll be back in just a little bit. Please stay with us, folks.
Hey, it's Red from the Red Pill Show. Are you trying to wake up? Are you trying to wake some of your family members and friends up? Are you hearing,
I don't want to talk about it. I got my own problem.
Or, oh, hey, man, dude, I don't want to hear that. I got a job and I got to feed my family. Well, tune in on Sunday nights from 8 p.m. till 9:30 p.m. Central Standard Time, and we'll try to wake them up. Remember, it's everything and anything against the New World Order here on FreedomizerRadio.com.
Oh, you want to heal the world? Oh, you can't do that. You know, you got to elect the right people. No, change your thinking. Change the way you feel. Change the way you do things. Do everything for peace. Like John Lennon said, walk for peace. You take a shower for peace. Do whatever you do for peace.
Every time you do that, you set a ripple effect out.
Because we live in a vibrational world, and your brain is the instrument. To learn how to direct and control your mind, you guys are superheroes. You know, they don't want you to know that, but you are. You guys are the most powerful people in the world.
We see the power in you to change your thinking. Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday, only on Freedomizer Radio.
Greetings, this is Blake the Eccentric, and I want to invite you to check out my new show on Freedomizer Radio, The Eccentric Perspective. It's sort of a red pill, blue pill, going down the rabbit hole kind of show, featuring outside-the-box politics, philosophy, and gonzo journalism. But be warned, with knowledge comes responsibility, and you might not see the world the same way again, as I will attempt to open your mind, speak to your common sense, and challenge your critical thinking skills. So please join me Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday from noon to 1:30 Pacific Time. Once again, that's Eccentric Perspective, only on Freedomizer Radio.
Hi, you're invited to tune in to the Health In Show each Monday on Homeopathy World Community with Debbie Brook, your host, speaking to health experts. We learn about homeopathic energy medicine as a catalyst to boost the immune system and your vital force. Visit homeopathyworldcommunity.com or go to Facebook, Homeopathy World Community.
When tyranny rears its ugly head, will you bow and serve, or will you stand and fight?
Hi, everybody. This is Barack Obama. You get this hungry.
Everybody here wants the pie. We want to grow the pie, and then we want to fight for the pie.
When freedom is threatened, will you turn a blind eye, or will you sound the alarm?
The private sector is doing fine.
Hey, folks, this is The Mouth, host of The Last Voice for Liberty Network. Tune in Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. Pacific, 11 Central, for your ultimate dose of liberty right here on FreedomizerRadio.com.
What can we get done right now?
We're back.
Was that Obama?
I think it was.
Oh. Okay. All right. Well, if it's okay, I have a book in front of me called Vaccine Free, Prevention and Treatment of Infectious Contagious Disease with Homeopathy. It's the second edition already. It's a manual for practitioners and consumers, written by Kate Birch. I took her course in homeopathic prophylaxis, and that is a 44-month process, giving your kids or yourself remedies every month to improve and educate condition and your immune system, so that your body, your immune system, recognizes what is foreign to itself and what is itself, what's okay and what's not okay. And, you know, we're mostly composed of bacteria anyway. And so that happens when the baby is first born and goes through the birth canal and is now picking up all of the different bacteria from the mother. Otherwise, before that time, it was in a safe, secure womb, a place that was free of any of that. And as we go along in life, we are constantly in contact with everything that we touch. We're picking up all sorts of things. And kids who are the strongest, supposedly, are out there playing in the dirt, getting acclimated, and finding a harmony with their environment. So I would like to read Randall Neustetter, OMD, LACCCH, who has practiced homeopathy and Chinese medicine for over 25 years, probably longer than that since the book was published, specializing in child health care. He's an accomplished and well-recognized author. He has written this vaccine guide, Risks and Benefits for Children and Adults. That was published in 2002, a book that helps consumers make informed choices about vaccination. And so he wrote the foreword to this book by Kate Birch. And if anybody's interested, they can contact me and you can learn more about her program, her homeoprophylaxis program. And he says, an ever-increasing percentage of parents are choosing not to vaccinate their children. Faced with an avalanche of newly developed and relatively untested vaccines, we didn't talk about that, they don't test them, but they put them on the market anyway, parents have become wary. The sheer number of vaccines in the recommended schedule is confusing and suspiciously overwhelming. This, combined with reports of autism, asthma, autoimmune disease, eczema, is as a consequence of vaccination worries parents. There are now many books and websites that provide volumes of information to make truly informed decisions about vaccination choices. So even though they're trying to squash and squell the AVN, the Australian Vaccination Network, all of that information is still out there. It's all over the internet. It's not going to prevent parents from researching on their own today. practitioners of holistic medicine, including holistic pediatricians, homeopaths, naturopaths, pediatric acupuncturists, and chiropractors, have taken on the task of educating parents about the potential risks and adverse effects of vaccines. Holistic practitioners recognize the role of vaccines in the increasing incidence of immune dysfunction and chronic disease. And that's one of the things that Dr. Isaac Golden speaks about quite often. When they do testing for safety and for efficacy, they only test it for a very short period of time, whether it's a couple of weeks or a couple of months. But they're not looking at the full range of what happens down the line, years from the time that they get the vaccine, whether they go into an autoimmune disorder. And you just think about the aluminum that's in it and how it will affect the brain, causing Alzheimer's later in life. Often, these practitioners caution parents about the risks of vaccines and encourage them to avoid them. Part of their confidence is taking this position is due to the effectiveness of holistic methods in the treatment of childhood infectious disease. Where conventional allopathic medicine has no treatment for most of the infectious disease that vaccines seek to prevent, the sciences of homeopathy and herbal medicine provide treatment and preventative approaches that have proven effective in clinical practice over hundreds of years. And we have many very large studies covering multi-millions of people in a country, in both Brazil and Cuba, that prove that homeoprophylaxis actually prevents the onset of contagious disease. In their situations after hurricane, where normally unsanitary conditions bring on leptospirosis or other kinds of infection. And the results were so good that they repeated those working in with the government. Actually, the government instituted giving these homeopathic remedies to the populations to prevent illness. The book that I'm looking at right now, which is Vaccine Free by Kate Birch, presents the position of homeopathy in relation to these infectious diseases for the first time through a thorough, systematic and practical volume. And I can tell you the book is hefty. It's 465 pages, including the index. It is bound to give both parents and practitioners confidence in the ability of homeopathy to prevent and treat these diseases. And that's something that parents, you know, we have so many concerns, so many worries and doubts about ourselves and about our children and keeping them safe. When you have this information and you realize it actually works, you do build up your confidence and you know how to understand what is happening in your child's life when they exhibit symptoms. How do you deal with it? Do you freak out? Do you panic? Or do you say, okay, the body is doing its proper healing work. It's exhibiting a fever in response to a foreign substance, to a foreign body, something that's alien to it, and it's cleaning itself out. So the promotion of vaccination is based on fear of infectious disease, says Dr. Neustetter. If doctors have no treatment for a disease that is capable of causing complications, such as measles or mumps, then they will be inclined to recommend a vaccine to prevent those complications, despite the risks. And, you know, I'm hearing a lot of stories and reading it on the internet that folks in Florida are flocking to chickenpox parties, which is kind of a good thing because when you get that disease at a young age, which is the natural cycle of the disease, you are building a life immunity and reducing the incidence of shingles, which is now has risen exponentially in older people, and it's very, very debilitating. So the fear of the disease in conventional medical practice is greater than the fear of the adverse effect of the vaccine. I think that's something I should be quoting. Now, repeat that again. The fear of the disease in conventional medical practice is greater than the fear of the adverse effect of the vaccine. That's really great. However, our increasing knowledge of the chronic diseases produced by vaccines is changing that equation. If we have an alternative approach to disease prevention and treatment, then we may not need these potentially toxic vaccines at all. Homeopathy does provide adequate disease treatment, and with the knowledge of homeopathic methods, healthcare practitioners can manage these diseases. Furthermore, with a holistic approach, such as homeopathy, practitioners can prevent the complications of these diseases with appropriate and effective treatment of the active disease. So what he's indicating here is hopefully you will be using preventative care, such as homeoprophylaxis, if you wish to do that, or boost your immune system with vitamin D and vitamin C and sunlight and deep breathing and meditation and reduce stress so that you're not susceptible to disease. Improve your relationships, because every disease really comes from spirit, from soul, from emotional disruption. Those things put our system into kind of disorder, and we are in a weakened state. So the stronger we are, the more we can throw off the disease. Let's say we do catch it. So then he's saying we have effective treatments for the active disease for things like fever, rash, cough, and runny nose. Those basic things are the body's way of healing itself. A holistic, and he continues, a holistic medical approach that also includes adequate nutrition and breastfeeding. Hey guys, have you been reading all about what's in the Similac and the baby formulas that are given to every mother who gives birth in their little package? Go and give your, don't use what nature made for you. Use some kind of powdered formula that is made out of GMO soy and some other stuff and chemicals instead of what God made for you. Well, he says breastfeeding is actually one of the greatest things that you can do to build the immune system. And the child, since they are born in the first year of life, have little immunity. You are giving it to your newborn through mother's milk. I'm going to repeat then. Dr. Neustetter says a holistic medical approach that also includes adequate nutrition and breastfeeding, constitutional treatment, and avoidance of toxins will create a healthy, resilient child who is much less likely to develop serious infectious disease or complications of simple childhood illness. So we are concerned about prevention, but we want to balance the risk of the vaccines to the risk of getting a natural disease and building natural immunity, which is the way we have been in concert with the evolution of the planet for millions of years. This is the way we are supposed to evolve. Since when did the planet provide an injection of some kind of cocktail of so many ingredients? It's very unnatural. Commonly encountered bacteria, like Haemophilus influenzae, will not invade and infect the nervous system, causing meningitis. Common childhood diseases like flu and chickenpox will not progress into secondary infections, such as pneumonia. Homeopaths and others now have a welcome and definitive guide to the treatment of the infectious diseases. And here what he's saying is, you know, influenza is not the killer that it's meant to be, and the numbers are all distorted because they lump into it the secondary infection of influenza. They don't talk about the fact that the person who died at that period in their life already had autoimmune disease or some kind of organ deficiency or some kind of other problem that put them in a state of susceptibility. And homeopathy is all about susceptibility. So he's saying that the secondary infection won't progress to that point if you're using all of the alternative means that you have available with good nutrition, fluids, baths, all of the things that you can possibly do, and constitutional homeopathic remedies and specific organ remedies. And there's infectious contagious disease remedies that have been proven throughout centuries of time. So with this book, practitioners now have the tools to both prevent disease during epidemic exposure, and to treat infectious disease if they occur. For these reasons, it is an invaluable pediatric resource. And the reason he says that is because a good portion of this book, many hundreds of pages, are given to each particular contagious disease, a listing of the definition of that disease, what we know about that in traditional medicine, what happens, what are the symptoms, what are the typical treatments, and how a homeopath would use homeopathic remedies to treat, and which ones were the best one for each disease. So Ms. Kate Birch has accumulated a complete reference to both common and unusual illnesses, gleaning information from many sources over the long history of homeopathy's encounters with these diseases. Practitioners in the West may never encounter yellow fever or typhoid or diphtheria. And you know what? I might raise my hand if I was in a classroom for that. As global warming heats up the planet, these diseases are moving up from the south, from the tropical climates, and we never know what's going to happen to the United States. But homeopathy has been extremely effective in treating these illnesses. Throughout history, homeopathy has been used in countries all across the globe. Homeopathy's fame and popularity in the United States during the late 19th and early 20th centuries was due in large measure to its extraordinary success with these epidemic diseases. In mumps, measles, polio are also now rare conditions in the West, but when they occur, this book will guide us to the treatments that have proven themselves effective during the era when these diseases were prevalent. Whooping cough now is commonly encountered by holistic pediatric practitioners whose patients avoid the pertussis vaccine or when the vaccine fails, which we're finding out is happening more and more often. And homeopathy, again, has very effective treatment for whooping cough. And on Homeopathy World Community about 3 years ago, I wrote a very long, detailed list of rubrics and homeopathic remedies that cover the disease of whooping cough and the different ways that each individual will exhibit the symptoms. Armed with this text, practitioners can feel confident that these diseases are manageable and their corresponding vaccines unnecessary. The unique and remarkable contribution of this book is a thorough presentation of the homeopathic understanding of vaccine reactions and their management. So not only does Ms. Birch provide the chapter on each contagious disease, along with the appropriate homeopathic remedies that could potentially alleviate the problems, she also provides information about when a person has a vaccine reaction. What are we going to do in that case? And that's something that so many people are coming up against, and it completely changes their family dynamics, their life, when they have to deal with a child who is unable to function properly. So it's really important for us all to learn this information. Armed with this knowledge, practitioners can then follow the guidelines and remedy suggestions she outlines to treat the resulting symptom picture. The understanding of how vaccines can undermine the health of children can also help parents in making the important and difficult decisions about infectious disease prevention for their families. This unique addition to the homeopathic literature will prove invaluable to practitioners who treat these children and to parents who can rely on the science of homeopathy for their children's health and safety. And that is the introduction forward by Dr. Randall Neustetter. And, you know, homeopathy is a science. No matter how many people, or how many skeptics, how many people are going to put it down and call it names and curse and say it's unscientific, it's just water, it's placebo, there's nothing in it, it can't possibly work, but it's killing people, you know, two ends of the spectrum there, and they say it's killing people because people are not going to go out and get either a vaccine or traditional conventional medicine. I shouldn't call it traditional. I should call it conventional modern medicine, which is only a couple 100 years old. It's not that old. Whereas Ayurvedic and all the other methods are thousands of years old. Don't you believe that they had some wisdom to teach us? So I think I'm coming up to the end of the show time. I don't know if anybody has tuned in. If Alan, do you want to talk? I should put you on if you want to say a word at the end.
No, Debbie, okay. I'm delighted to hear all that you've said here, and I hope we can come back in future shows and go ahead and go in depth to some of what these recommendations are, and maybe some of the theory about homeoprophylaxis specifically, because I know it's a particular use of homeopathy different than homeopathy
right.
as it's used to treat present illnesses, for example, or other conditions. So it'd be interesting to dive into this more deeply, because it's not enough to just say there are problems with vaccines. You know, we do have far less problem with infectious disease in our world today than we did a century ago, but we still have these infectious diseases. And so there's a need, and perhaps will always be a need to one degree or another, to have ways of dealing with them. And I think you and I would agree that right at or near, if not at the top of the list, is homeoprophylaxis. And so
right.
it certainly is something that bears going into more depth and detail on here over time.
Great. And I really appreciate all that you do for these shows, and that you open up the show with such great information for folks out there about the legalities on this topic. We are one of the primary shows, I think, on the internet talking about this issue in all of its facets, in all of its applications, both our commentary, our opinions, and what's out there in the news, so that we're keeping up to date and relaying this information to people. And you're providing an incredible service to people who want to advocate for their own rights and protect themselves rather than taking a vaccine if that is a concern that they have. We have about 3 minutes, so your exit song is a minute, and so I'm kind of still learning about this. How about if we put on a little promo for your ebook, and I don't know, sometimes I want to just whistle a happy tune on my way out. Oh, I know. I had something prepared. I had something prepared to say, and I could say it at the end. It's, you know, I love positive energy. I love uplifting our spirits. And this comes from Rabbi Schneerson, who says, everything that exists in your world is about communion with the infinite. Everything is one of three: a means to connect, a path to fall away, or neutral ground awaiting you to transform it into a connection. But if something were not part of your purpose, it would not exist in your world. So what? Take that home. I mean, with you. That means that whatever you have in your house, whatever kind of clutter it is, think about it. What's it doing there? What's its purpose? What's its meaning? Do you need to keep it? You need to get rid of it. If you have friends that are giving you messages, what do those messages mean to you? If you're hearing the same thing over and over again, or bumping into the same color, I don't know what it is. Whatever it is in your life, there's the three means of communion with the infinite: to connect with it, to fall away from it, from that path, or to be on neutral ground awaiting you to transform it into a connection. And if something were not part of your purpose, it would not exist in your world, which basically says each one of us is a world unto itself. We are each a total world. So I'm going to put on ebook.
Vaccines are required for students, employees, immigrants, military members, and international travel. Do you know how to legally avoid them? This is vaccine rights attorney and Freedomizer radio host Alan Phillips. My vaccine exemption ebook can help you avoid the mistakes that have cost others their exemption rights. Get the authoritative guide to vaccine legal exemptions, an ebook available at freedomizerradio.com and vaccinerights.com.
Let freedom.
Thank you for using Blog Talk Radio. Goodbye.